It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as we begin the program, let me just remind you that number, if you'd like to reach out to them, and I would recommend that you consider this, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or you can go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please. harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
And Wes, good afternoon to you as well.
Good afternoon.
So our topic today, what's happening?
Right. Lockwood, let's start off by acknowledging that we all know the courthouse is really a place and reflection of all of the twists and turns of life that happen out in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And in our real world, we have lots of times when parties, our clients, are needing what we might just kind of generally call immediate relief. And sometimes this takes the form of a temporary restraining order. Sometimes it's referred to as a preliminary injunction. Other times it's referred to as an interim order. Wes is going to take over here in a moment because this is his area of practice. But in the introduction, we already see, Lockwood, all of these words such as preliminary injunction, mm-hmm. temporary restraining order, interim order. What these are meaning is that the court is giving immediate relief because the factual circumstances indicate that there could be, if you will, irreparable damage or whatever the facts might indicate, but that the client is needing some sort of immediate relief. And then there is, after this immediate order, there is then an opportunity for the parties to get more organized, get their witnesses, their documents, their evidence, if you will, to go back before the court and begin the process of some what Wes would refer to, I think, as a more permanent solution. But isn't it interesting, Lockwood, that as we introduce this topic today, that, you know, the courthouse, one would think that it's almost open 24/7,
mm-hmm.
Because we need sometimes this relief is just has to be sought under emergent circumstances. And so our law firm many times is involved in cases like this. Sometimes, as we know, it can be a domestic case. It can be a property case concerning one's property. I mean, if the bulldozer is there ready to bulldoze the trees on your property, guess what,
right.
Lockwood? You got to move pretty quickly, don't
right.
you?
Yeah.
So the facts and circumstances are as broad as is life in general. Our elder person, our elder person who is out, you know, wandering around and is lost. Our elder person who's lost, you know, $100,000 out of their bank account. Again, there are just many circumstances of life where we as the lawyer have to move very, very quickly to mitigate and or stop the immediate damage. And so absolutely the law in the state of North Carolina is extraordinary in terms of how these different cases frame up. When these folks call our office, they then would meet with Wes and his team, and you know, within days, Wes is over to the courthouse, to the Superior Court, usually sometimes the clerk or the magistrate, to get a temporary order from there. So that's the introduction of the topic today, Lockwood. We might move with it today and revisit it next week. I think it's a fascinating and very interesting topic.
It is, and I hadn't even considered that. I have one quick question before we go too far into this. And you mentioned a moment ago in instances where the court is not open, things of this nature, and you just gave an example. I thought very good one. The bulldozer is now primed and ready to start taking down trees. How quickly can you respond to these emergency emergency situations.
Right. So normally, Lockwood, as we all hear and know, and I experience, and my clients experience on a pretty regular basis, the wheels of justice move pretty slowly mm-hmm. in many respects. You know, you've heard me joke on the radio program here that, you know, it's not like Law and Order where the person's, you know, killed one day and the next day we have a trial.
Right.
Things normally move very slowly, and there's a reason for that, because obviously the cases have to develop, and we're talking about, of course, civil cases. But in particular situations that are all carved out by statute, there is a right to very quick remedies in many cases to do things such as maintain the status quo, to keep someone who may be abusing someone else, you know, away from that person, to stop domestic violence, to deal with some, to get an interim guardian, for example, to deal with someone who may be taken advantage of financially, or someone like Cecil indicated who may be wandering mm-hmm. and putting themselves in danger, you know, and therefore, you know, if those facts and circumstances present themselves, then these particular statutes then kick in, allowing us for this immediate relief, which, you know, every judge, clerks, so on and so forth, are familiar with exactly how these things work, and they know that when these type situations hit their desk, you put everything to the side and you handle this immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an immediate type relief. So just to kind of break down, Lockwood, a couple of these areas, three or four of these areas, like in the guardianship context, I think we were talking about guardianship some last week or the week before. In the guardianship, you know, normally this is for an adult, someone who lacks capacity, who is unable to make decisions for themselves, and maybe, you know, taken advantage of. Therefore, we need someone to take over for them. Well, you don't get to a hearing adjudicating someone incompetent and having a guardian appointed overnight. It doesn't happen immediately, but you have the right under the statute to have an interim guardian appointed. And that does happen almost overnight, very quickly. And that would be in a situation where we have someone who is being taken advantage of, and we maybe need to take control of their finances, or we maybe need to have some authority over their decision-making immediately because they're doing something that is detrimental to their health, like I said, wandering down the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're in a situation where they have a chemical imbalance, and they have schizophrenia or something along those lines, and they're suffering from manic situations where they're okay one day, but then the next day they're going off the handle, and we need to get control of this immediately. You know, so that in the context of guardianship is an immediate way to get relief, called an appointment of an interim guardian. In the world of, let's say, domestic violence or stalking, what we refer to is an ex parte order.
Mm-hmm.
This would be what's called a 50B order in domestic violence, where we can get an ex parte order. And what that means basically is you can, upon pleading the proper facts and evidence, you can get directly to a judge, and the judge will enter an ex parte order. That means with only one side being represented, that means the other side doesn't have, you don't have to put the other side on notice because we need an immediate order, okay? Or in the context of a sexual situation, some sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
or stalking that falls under our 50C statute, you can get an ex parte order as well. Now, as far as either of these situations, there's a return on the ex parte normally within 10 days, so we have a full hearing then within the 10 days, because the ex parte order is only only statutorily has a life for 10 days. Mm-hmm. Now, in many cases, it's extended by agreement of the attorneys involved. But, you know, it could be a very quick thing. I had some yesterday entered on a case, and we'll be having return hearings on that very soon. And then finally, and there are other areas, but these are kind of the ringleaders, so to speak, we have just kind of the catch-all where we have the right under Rule 65, again, another statute under our Rules of Civil Procedure, for a temporary restraining order. We've heard of that before. Mm-hmm. And that's the context of if there may be irreparable harm, meaning harm we can't fix at a later date. We want to maintain the status quo. And, you know, the standard fact scenario that we deal with regard to that is, I think what you learn in law school is the 100-year-old oak tree is about to be cut down.
Right.
And maybe there's a dispute about whether that is on person A's property or person B's property, you know. But once that 100-year-old oak tree is cut down, then how can we put it back? So obviously a temporary restraining order would be a quick remedy that we could get. And again, a TRO is ex parte. You can get that very quickly, but then you have a return hearing. And it's also a 10-day period of time. So, you know, there are multiple areas of the law where, you know, we utilize these rules all the time. You can kind of tell as you listen to us talk about them. I'm not reading from a piece of paper here. I'm talking to you off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. We deal with these quite often because, you know, individuals, our clients in life deal with these situations. These are real life situations. So it's important to master these rules so that we can do what's necessary in order to protect our clients' rights.
We're talking with Wes Collins of Harvell & Collins. That was Wes a moment ago. And Cecil Harvell, of course, started off the program this afternoon talking about the issue of, immediate relief. And I do want to remind you again, as we take a quick break, that if you want to reach out to Harvell & Collins, you can do so easily. Via phone, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or as I mentioned also, by checking out their website at harvellandcollins.com. That's harvellandcollins.com. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins this afternoon. The issue is immediate relief, and Wes, you were going through a sort of a list of experiences and circumstances associated with immediate relief. The one question I have is, to whom do you take these cases? Where do you, in other words, to a clerk of court, magistrate, to a judge? And if so, you know, is there, you mentioned earlier, the fact that basically justice does not move at the speed of light, but in some instances you have to move very quickly. How do you go about doing that?
Right. So what courts do you bring each of these in? Well, original jurisdiction on the guardianship, in the guardianship-type cases. So for an interim guardian appointment in the guardianship, that is going to be with the clerk of superior court in the county, most likely in the county where the person resides, mm-hmm. Okay? And that's the person who needs the guardian. As it relates to the domestic situation or the stalking or the maybe sexual abuse, these type situations, that is, in most cases, going to be with the district court. That is the court that normally deals with family law and deals with misdemeanor criminal matters, okay, in the county where the person resides. And then in the context under Rule 65 for the temporary restraining order or the preliminary injunction, which is the return on the after the or the approximate 10-day return hearing, that's either going to be in the district court or it's going to be in the superior court, and I prefer normally to file those in the superior court because I'm in superior court more than I am district court. Mm-hmm. So I'm just that's just my preference, but the statute doesn't require, you know, one over the other. So yes, I mean, you need to know obviously where to file these. You can't decide that, okay, I'm going to file a guardianship in the district court and file it as a lawsuit. No, it has to specifically be filed as a guardianship matter, a special proceeding matter in the respective office of the clerk of court. So, yes, but again, you know, when you file those, these courts, they move them very quickly because they know about them.
Right.
They deal with them.
Right.
I mean, not every day, but pretty often.
So, Lockwood, what we're beginning to hear is that, of course, there would be an applicable statute, if you will, relatively speaking, to each substantive area. I mean, one would go and look at the interim guardianship mm-hmm. and the guardianship statutes with regarding a guardianship hearing. Domestic case, one would look at the domestic statute. A civil suit, one would look at, you know, whatever the trespass or whatever the case might be. And what we're beginning to hear, Lockwood, is that two things. Number one, a temporary order, an interim order, an immediate relief order is going to more than likely require a heightened sense of factual circumstances mm-hmm. and potentially the harm if there is no interim order would be, if you will, irreparable. Maybe someone's life, maybe their finances, you know, the oak tree, as we've mentioned, you know, someone's personhood, a threat of violence or things of that nature. There could be potential immediate harm. So that is going to permeate through all of these statutes. That's going to be kind of a guiding principle that's going to apply in most all of these circumstances, Lockwood, that there's something not very good that is about to happen immediately. Now, the second thing that we want our listeners to understand is that that's the first element.
Cecil, hold on just 1 second.
Sure.
I'm calling in, of course, from my home. I have someone at my door. I'm going to put the phone down. I'll be right back.
Okay.
No problem. The second element, Lockwood.
There we go.
The second concept is that, okay, we will give you a temporary order, an interim order. We will sign it right now, okay? But you're going to have to come back to court. And usually these are like 10-day period. They're very prompt. You're going to have to come back to us, back to Superior Court, back to the clerk, and give us more circumstances. Mm-hmm. Because, again, Lockwood, what happened on the front end is that, you know, we got the order, if you will, the temporary restraining order, the interim order,
right.
You know, whatever is referred to in the statute. The name changes, but the concept here kind of doesn't, Lockwood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we've given you this order, but if we're going to hold up the bulldozer, if we're going to keep this person off your property, if we're going to lock down the bank account, those are very significant things, and the other party has not had an opportunity to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, we're going to have you come back on the merits of all of this and give the court more detail. So there's an interplay, Lockwood, between those two elements, and I hope I explained that pretty well.
You did, and it leads me to some questions, but before I get to that very quickly, remind our audience that we're listening to Harvell and Collins, Let's Talk Legal, here on the Talk Station. If you wish to reach out to either Cecil or Wes or any of the staff there at Harvell and Collins, let me remind you that number, 252 area code 726-9050. That's 726-9050. And, of course, via email at Harvell and Collins, you'll see the various staff there at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and. Cecil.
I'm back now, Lockwood.
All right. Cecil, Wes, let's go back to this issue of the evidence that you just mentioned a few moments ago.
Right.
My first question is, obviously in the case of a restraining order or any of this immediate action, you've got to take some documentation, I would assume, to the magistrate, to the clerk of court, to the superior court judge when you're asking for any number of things of immediate activity, such as a restraining order or a temporary restraining order or a preliminary injunction. So
right.
you've got to have some evidence that so I'm assuming there's some, not all of the evidence, but some evidence. Is that, am I correct on that?
That's correct. You know, I think a case that I've been dealing with for some time that brings some context to this would be, I have a client who has a business, and it's a successful business that on a piece of somewhat rural property that is accessed through an easement.
Right.
And so there's a dispute with regard to the easement itself and who has what rights in the easement.
Mm-hmm.
The property owners around the property contend that my client is overburdening or overusing the easement by operating this business, because the business has times where it's very busy and there are lots of cars, and times where it's not as busy. It's an event type business.
Right.
So when they have the event, there's lots of people there. So one of the things we did in that case, Lockwood, is that we fairly early on got a preliminary injunction put in place, and that is skipping over the temporary restraining order quick remedy and going straight to the preliminary injunction, which is the remedy with both sides having the right to then argue to the court before it's entered. Okay, it's quick, but it's not immediate. Okay, it's a preliminary type mm-hmm. order that's entered. So, yes, to put the evidence before the court, we can't just show up. I can't just show up and argue we want a preliminary injunction. We need evidence before the court regarding the easement itself, regarding the language in the easement, regarding what the dispute is about, what the other side contends, is the problem, what they're doing, for example. They, were attempting to block the easement or to do things to threaten our guest, these mm-hmm. type things. This kind of behavior can't go on. We need to be able to maintain the status quo, which is, be able to use our easement until this gets resolved in court. So we want all of this evidence before the court in an affidavit or in a verified pleading, meaning my client signs as the pleading that we file indicating that this is everything in it is true, and then we have a hearing, and then the court could certainly take testimony. It wants to can take evidence through witness testimony about that to then decide the what will be included in the preliminary injunction. I think another interesting part of that would be that what happens if we have a preliminary injunction that says under this context, okay, don't block the easement, don't threaten people, don't do these things that are disrupting just basically people getting along,
mm-hmm.
okay? Well, what is our remedy then in the event someone violates that? Well, the remedy is contempt of court, because the preliminary injunction is a court order, and that court order says, these are the things you cannot do. If you do them, then you're going to have to come to court and answer for them. So the way that works is that, again, another layer of evidence, mm-hmm. we put the evidence on before the court through affidavit. On this date, the person threatened me. On this date, there was a video where he pointed a gun at me, whatever it may be. And so based on that, the court normally would enter a what's called a show cause order, and that requires the party who is allegedly in violation of the preliminary injunction to come to court and to put on evidence. That's shifting the burden to that person to prove to the court, based on his evidence or her evidence, that there was no violation. Okay, and then in the event that there was, then the court has a fairly broad host of remedies, but most of it ends up in being put in jail.
Ooh.
Right.
yeah.
Yeah, and if you're in violation,
ooh.
Then you know, the court can do like take your guns away from you.
Right.
Or the court can say, you know, you were incarcerated for a period of, 90 days or, you know, whatever it may be, can take rights away from you. The court does not have the right to impose a monetary sanction in that regard. But you know, kind of one more layer with that is that, let's say we have an order that, let's say that the court has entered an order requiring the other side to pay attorney's fees. This is just kind of leading up to contempt. And they don't do that, okay? And they had to pay those within a certain time. Well, if they don't do that, they're in contempt of court. If the court ordered the payment of attorney's fees, this is not a judgment. A judgment is like, okay, you didn't pay your credit card and there's a judgment against you, mm-hmm. okay, that kind of thing. This is an order to require payment of attorney's fees. Well, if you don't do that, then you can be held in contempt of court. And the remedy for the court is not, okay, we're going to enter another order saying you have to pay the attorney's fees. No, the remedy is, okay, you're going to jail until you purge yourself of this contempt, meaning you need to go find the money.
Right.
So there's a, you know, really all roads end when we're talking about court orders, not judgments. We're not, you know, we don't have debtor's prison, you know, but we're talking about orders. We're talking about if the court orders you to do something, if you don't do it, then contempt is the remedy. And in the most significant remedy that would be imposed or required would be imposed would be for the person to be incarcerated or to be put in jail until they purge themselves.
I'm jumping in. I just have a quick note here before we wrap it up. In instances of, for example, restraining orders and things of this nature, that again is another example where if someone fails to fulfill their requirements on a restraining order, they also would possibly end up being incarcerated. Am I correct on that?
That's right. That's right. If there is talked about the 50B and the 50C, which is oftentimes referred to as a restraining order, meaning you have to stay away from this person uh-huh. because you've been threatening to them, or domestic violence or whatever it may be, those orders have a life of no longer than a year, okay?
Right.
You can refile them after a year, refile for them after a year. But if you're in violation, let's say that the order indicates you have to stay at least, you know, whatever, 50 feet away from the person, and, you know, you get right up in their face and threaten them, and you get recorded on the iPhone that you did that, then here we go down the contempt road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a court order, you didn't comply with it. Now we allege that you're in contempt, and we have a hearing on contempt. Again, the show cause and then the contempt. And, you know, the court could require you to be put in jail.
Okay.
So, yep, there's some pretty... These orders are not just pieces of paper that say don't do things. I mean, they carry with them the strength of the law, which allows courts, after, you know, hearing proper evidence, to place people in jail, even for these civil-related matters.
We're talking, that's Wes Collins. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. That was Wes Collins a moment ago here on Let's Talk Legal. And we're talking about the issue of immediate relief. We're about to wrap things up. But a real quick question, you sort of alluded to it a moment ago, Wes and Cecil, and that is the fact of the length of these temporary orders. Do they vary in length based on the kind of order?
They do. If you're doing a temporary restraining order, or if you have, I mean, there's lots of different rules here. If you have a temporary restraining order, that's only good for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in many cases, it's extended by agreement until we get to the final preliminary injunction hearing. Okay, so there's that. You have the interim order in guardianship, and basically what that says is good for 45 days.
Okay.
And the idea there is you get the order, but then we're going to have a final guardianship hearing within 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that your temporary restraining order under Rule 65, which is like, you know, don't cut the tree down, that's a 10-day period of time.
Okay.
But that, again, the idea there is that the 10-day period is enough time for us to have a final hearing on it, on the preliminary injunction. In many cases, a temporary restraining order will be converted into a preliminary injunction if, after hearing from both sides, the court agrees that that needs to be entered. So there are time frames that limit the length of them, but in many cases, well, they can always be extended by agreement.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but in many cases, just based on the court calendar and the availability of the attorneys and the parties, sometimes, you know, it's right. These are extended just by agreement.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell in West Collins. That was West Collins a moment ago, and we're talking about the issue of immediate orders. And as you mentioned, Cecil, the courthouse is where life presents itself. So
yes,
that's a good example of that. As we wrap it up with you, I think there's some other questions we can ask in the future on this topic. It's an issue of immediate relief, and I want to thank Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, and remind you it's harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and that number again, 252 area code 726-9050, here on Let's Talk Legal. Gentlemen, look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you,
Lockwood.